Night performance on Thursday, April 30th, will be a special benefit for the Living Hope Wheelchair Association at Talento Bilingue de Houston, 333 South Jensen Drive at 7 p.m. All Houston performances will be followed by an actor audience discussion. For tickets and directions, go to healthcareforalltexas.org, HCFAT.org.
Center Radio, live on KPFT. Collective, not-for-profit media for social and economic justice. Online at houston.indymedia.org.
Hey, Houston. Thanks so much for kicking off your weekend with us here at the Houston Indie Media Show. We would just like to give a shout-out to Gordon, our guest board op for the revolution, and also sending some positive energy out there to Courtney and Rachel, who can't be with us this evening. And along with Gordon on the boards is V. So what we want to do is we'll get started here in just a second. And we hope that everyone is adjusting to the new Friday evening schedule. From 7 to 7:30, Thresholds will be preceding us, so we welcome them as our new guest host, our neighbor host. And anyway, so tonight we'll take a closer look at the growing backlash from parents and students against the high-stakes testing monster that has taken over public education. Our very own Rachel Clark brings us voices from across the country, as well as right here in Houston, with this report.
Did you know that because of the new standardized testing programs, that public school students will spend more time each year being tested and less time actually learning? For example, elementary school students will spend more time taking state standardized tests this year than a law school student spends taking the bar exam, and more time than the exams required to become a police officer, teacher, or school superintendent. Now, some people say we need all this testing to increase student learning and hold teachers accountable. But what do these tests really tell us about learning and quality teaching? Actually, not much. For tests to provide diagnostic information about student learning, there must be at least 20 to 25 questions for each skill in each standard being tested. None of these new tests have that many questions. To be useful for instruction, teachers and parents need the results returned quickly, and they need to be able to see the actual questions students got right and wrong. The results from these tests are not formative. They're summative, used to monitor, not educate. Also, the results won't be returned until after students finish the school year. Parents, teachers, and children will never be able to see all the questions from the tests. It's kind of like going for an annual checkup at your doctor, waiting 5 months for the results, and not being able to know which test the doctor ran on you. Standardized tests do not provide the in-depth information about teaching and learning that educators, parents, and children deserve. Worst of all, colleagues and I have been able to predict the test results using only U.S. Census data from your community. Using the results from commercially prepared standardized tests to make important decisions about educators and children is education malpractice. School and classroom-based assessments are more accurate. For example, grades and high school grade point average generally predicts college readiness and persistence through college more accurately than the SAT. Report cards and grade point average measure years of work. Standardized test measures one day. All the emphasis being put on the results and preparing for these tests is killing creativity in our public schools. Teachers are forced to focus on teaching to the test for fear of their job security. Kids are being denied full access to subjects that foster creativity, socially conscious problem solving, resilience, networking, and other skills necessary to compete in a 21st century economy. Testing is not teaching. Test preparation is not learning. Teachers are the ultimate instruction and assessment professionals. Their expertise can't be replaced by a score on a standardized test. Let's move away from standardized testing and toward authentic teaching. End the myopic focus on knowledge imitation and regurgitation aimed at finding one correct answer, and expand into creation and innovation with problem-based curricula and high-quality, open-ended classroom assessment. Let teachers teach. Let children learn.
Today I will express my concerns about the FSA testing. I consider myself a well-educated young lady. However, with FSA tests, my 5 years of school all on a roll do not matter. This testing looks at me as a number. One test defines me as either a failure or a success through a numbered rubric. one test at the end of the year that the teacher or myself will not even see the grade until after the school year is already over. I do not feel that all this FSA testing is accurate to tell how successful I am. It doesn't take an account of all my knowledge and abilities, just a small percentage. Here are my concerns. First of all, I do not feel good about a form in the FSA that you have to sign ensuring that you can't even discuss the test with your parents. I am not comfortable signing something like this. I have the right to talk to my parents about any and everything related to school and my education. Second, why am I being forced to take a test that hasn't even been testing non-students here in Florida, so happen to be accurate and valid on what I know? Why are we taking most of the year stressing and prepping for one test at the end of the year when we should be taking tests throughout the year that really measure our abilities? My opinion is that we should take a test at the beginning of the year, middle, and end of the school year to accurately measure what we know. Third, the stress and pressure that this testing puts on me, and I'm sure most students, is not healthy. Why should we have so much stress about one test when we should be learning and having fun in school? With all this testing in school, more fun things in school, such as recess, are being eliminated because of all the training for the test. So, ladies and gentlemen, school board, I urge you to put a stop to high-stakes testing today. It is not good for the schools, teachers, and students. Parents and students, contact your governor. Put a stop to all the standardized testing. Thank you so much for your time.
So, last year I did not opt my daughter out. I'm a co-founder of CVPE, but I didn't, and this year I am. So, 6 months ago Sunday, I said to my daughter, we're going to do math every Sunday from 1:30 to 2:30, and it'll be compensation for this test that you're not going to take. Are you willing? And she said she was willing. So these conversations can happen with our children so that they have ownership in this process. So if you're in high school, you can't opt out. You certainly can, but you won't graduate. Unless you go to a private school. If you're in grades 3 through 8, officially, only grades 5 and 8 in the state of Texas are counted for promotion purposes. The Math Star has no penalties for kids, but really all stars have no real penalties for kids because you can opt out of every single test and you can not take summer school because we have the state law that says you don't have to. You have to attend exactly one day of accelerated instruction if you opt out. And we know that. But you'll have to, except for the math, attend a grade placement committee. And the grade placement committee has to be unanimous, which means if you're on it, you're going to say, my child is getting promoted. Look at the other indicators that show that they know stuff. And you won't have to go to more than one day of summer school unless it was of value. 50,000 parents can do this in New York, and 17% of Colorado seniors, I'm reading down here, can do it last November, and 39% of kids in a school district can do it last week. Certainly we can get 50 people together to say enough is enough, we want our kids to learn. Additionally, the reason why my reason for opting out powerfully is because special ed kids are all going to take the on-level exam this year, and that's immoral, unconscionable, and illegal. I'm a grader with a brain injury, and my federally mandated IEP, that's the special ed paperwork, says I have a functional level of third grade because I have a brain injury. I'm a sixth grader or seventh grader. I'm going to take the on-level seventh grade STAR this year. 4 hours for writing, 4 hours again for writing, 4 hours for reading, 4 hours for math. And that's 16 hours if you're stupid. And that's just wrong. It's wrong for all of us. Whether we have kids or we don't have kids, we should go find people right now and say, you need to stop this. No school got sanctions as a consequence of people opting out, because your principals are going to say that. And no, and then there's a story, we'll talk about some of the other what ifs that people might say. But basically, you can opt out even though there is no right to opt out, even though you can opt out of things that you find morally objectionable or for religious reasons, but not to avoid a test. Texas Parent Rights Group in Waco has a lawyer who's reading every single line of TEA's code, and he said, well, a test is something a parent can see. You don't let us see this test, therefore it's not a test, so this is invalid. Yeah. All of these days of instruction, April 20th through 22nd, possibly the 23rd as well, because Sarah said so, you can have this awesome opportunity to go to the Live Oaks Meeting House, that's the Quakers, on West 26th in the Heights.
Well, I opted out last year, and I would have strong moral convictions against the high-stakes system of education that our kids are in. And I kind of fumbled my way through it. I didn't turn in any opt-out letter. I had a meeting with the principal, and unexpectedly, on the last day of school, my son was retained on his report card. Mm-hmm. And that's when that will probably happen if you opt out. I think that's automatic. At that point, I requested a grade placement committee from the principal, but between the last day of school and the grade placement committee, she transferred to another school. So we had the SSO come in for our grade placement committee. She stood behind the HISD policy about not being able to be promoted. And then we didn't get anywhere at that meeting, and I had a meeting with someone even further up, the chief academic officer, and that's where we worked out a deal where we could get my son in a place where he could be promoted. Feel that the district, especially above and beyond the state, is using our children like they're little workers to produce data to grade the teachers, when that's not their job in school. Mm-hmm. That's not my job. My child's job is not to go to school to evaluate his teacher. He's there to learn for himself. School is supposed to be academic. School is supposed to be a place where you can go and make mistakes. Mm-hmm. And not have it affect your middle school and high school and grown-up years. I feel that standardized tests are largely a measure of socioeconomic status. And that it's...
And it is also worth noting an increasing number of other stakeholders are organizing against this system. Last year, Waco ISD defied the Texas Education Agency and the Pearson Testing Corporation by holding classes for students who were opting out of the STAR. No word yet on what their plans are for this year. Also, just last Wednesday, the Katy Independent School District School Board unanimously passed a resolution calling for the abolition of high-stakes testing.
Locally, the report you just heard featured the voices of community activists for public education, co-founder Ruth Kravitz, as well as Claudia De Leon. Claudia was the lone parent who openly and defiantly opted her third grader out of the STAR reading and math within Houston ISD. The number this year promises to be higher. If you're interested in learning more about the opt-out movement, or if you are a parent that would like the tools needed to opt your child out of high-stakes testing here in the Houston area, you can visit the web at HoustonCVPE.org and click on the tab labeled Opt Out. State testing dates will be later this month for grades 3rd through 8th, specifically April the 20th through the 22nd, with the 23rd as a makeup day. Now, the Live Oaks Friends Meeting House will be hosting an alternative free educational experience for children opting out of STAR from 7:30 a.m. to 3:15 p.m. on those testing dates. They are located at 1318 West 26th Street in the Heights. Also worth noting is that for the first time, a number of issues tied to high-stakes testing, including the contract with Pearson itself, is being called into question this legislative session. You can contact your elected official and let them know your views on high-stakes testing, or for more active types, you can take to the streets and get on the bus for on April the 18th for a statewide rally for public education. This bus is free and leaving at 6 a.m. from 4400 West 18th Street in Houston. More information for this event can also be found at www.HoustonCVPE.org.
Now we're going to play a little bit more audio for you about education issues, as well as underreported headlines and Palestine Today, and then we'll be back with some announcements.
Children need to feel safe in school. Children need to be able to take risks to learn, and children don't take risks. People don't take risks if they don't feel safe. It's really hard to think about testing, third grade level testing for my third graders who sometimes come in well below grade level. So I might get a third grader in the beginning of third grade who's reading at a first grade reading level. That's where they are right now. And my work as a special educator, as an educator for any child, is to meet them where they are and help move them to the next place.
And their goals are based on where they are and where we're moving them step by step so that they take confident, independent steps towards their goals. And they are learning. Well, education is not a race. We don't have to have everybody start at the starting line and get to the finish line at the same time. The test almost treats education like a race, because these kids, who everyone knows this test is inappropriate for them, they're still asked to take it.
A child can make a lot of progress in a school year, but not be caught up to age level quite yet. So then if you're giving them a test that's difficult for typically developing children at that level, they may have moved from a first grade to a third grade in 6 months, but if they're not a strong fourth grade reader, they're going to fail horribly. And that's really dejecting for those kids who thought that they were doing well. And it's horrible for a teacher to watch their faces crumple when they are realizing, I guess I'm not as strong a reader as I thought I was.
Many of those kids even have modified promotional criteria listed as part of their education plan. And that's been thought about long and hard. So to have them face something so frustrating, I think it always hits me how upset they are and how surprised they are that the teachers who they've come to really, really trust, who they look to be nurturing, who they look to help them to learn, are presenting them with something that's so frustrating, so irrelevant, and so difficult for them. It feels like a violation and really, really cruel.
And the test is written in ways that are tricky, in ways that are often confusing to kids with language-based learning disorders, for kids who are learning English, who have two languages in their head. Sometimes we have kids who have three languages that they're thinking in our school. When the test comes, they look at it and it says third grade test all over the front of it. And they know they're third graders. And they look at this test and they feel crushed, because it feels too hard for them. And that's really hard. That's really hard as a teacher. Sorry. We want to make sure our kids feel successful every day. So when we're reading with them, we're always celebrating those small successes they have, those small gains they make, those new words they can read. And when they get hit with something that's way more than they can handle, it takes us way back. It suddenly makes them feel like all of their hard work is not enough. It feels like all the gains they've had in a year are nothing.
It's like saying, well, we have this system to respect the children where they are, but on those 6 testing days, we're asking them to be disrespected.
You want kids to go out of elementary school excited to learn. If they want to learn, then they're going to be okay. You know, they may have struggles, they may have things they have to overcome, but if they leave elementary school with that love of learning and a sense that they can learn and that learning is worthwhile, then they'll be all right in life.
Welcome to Palestine Today, a service of the International Middle East Media Center at www.imemc.org for Thursday, April 9th, 2015. Israeli settlers destroy Palestinian farmlands in the West Bank and in Gaza. Public workers go on strike to protest delayed in salaries. These stories and more coming up. Stay tuned. A group of Israeli extremists from an illegal Israeli outpost started on Thursday to dig a road on Palestinian lands to link it with their outpost in Al-Khadr town near the southern West Bank city of Bethlehem. The mayor, Tawfiq Salah, said that the assailants started digging the road in Ain al-Qassis area near their illegal Sidi Bouaz outpost. Salah added that the local residents noticed the attackers and managed to stop them after they'd leveled nearly 200 meters of lands. The officials said that completing this road would lead to an illegal appropriation of an entire mountain of approximately 100 acres of Palestinian lands and would also deny the Palestinians access to their lands nearby. The area has been subjected to frequent attacks that also include illegal annexation of lands, assaults on farmers, and uprooting dozens of trees. Israel has been trying to illegally annex large areas of Palestinian lands, especially since Al-Khadr is near the Jerusalem-Hebron Road, as Tel Aviv is aiming at using the lands in its so-called Greater Jerusalem Colonist Project that extends in the area to the north parts of the southern West Bank city of Hebron. Earlier on Thursday at dawn, Israeli soldiers invaded Kabatia town near the northern West Bank city of Jenin and kidnapped one Palestinian. Soldiers also invaded Beit Fajar south of Bethlehem and searched homes there. Elsewhere, the Public Workers Union in the Gaza Strip announced a general strike Thursday across all public institutions in protest against the government's continued failure to pay salaries to tens of thousands of employees of the former Hamas government. The strike announcement signals a renewed determination by public workers to pressure the Hamas Fatah Unity government to address the seeming crisis over the workers, whose future has been uncertain since the April 2014 Unity deal. In December, meanwhile, Israel froze some $127 million in tax funds owed to the Palestinian Authority in revenge of the PA's decision to join the International Criminal Court. The move has added to the lack of funds facing Palestinian authorities and has led to major salary problems for even recognized employees of the Palestinian Authority.
In a seldom-seen demonstration of labor unity, as many as 90,000 workers in Vietnam launched a strike on March 26th, targeting a giant corporate footwear factory outside of Ho Chi Minh City, which makes athletic shoes for Nike, Reebok, and Adidas. Workers went on strike for a week in protest against a new social insurance law, which would have prevented workers from taking a lump sum payout when they leave a company, delaying payment until they retire. Workers have said they are concerned the money may not be there in the future. The labor action, the worst since workers damaged foreign factories following China's placement of an oil rig in contested waters off of Vietnam's coast last year, was resolved when Vietnam's communist government agreed to reconsider the new pension law. Labor strikes are rare in Vietnam, a nation that is actively courting international investors to build garment and clothing factories. Vietnam, which now manufactures 10% of the world's shoes and footwear, saw its exports increase by over 20% in 2014. While there are Communist Party-affiliated labor unions in Vietnam, many workers complain that no one represents their interests. Romania's prosecutors hit pay dirt when they found 80,000 euros, three gold bars, and a Renoir painting in a safe belonging to Finance Minister Darius Valkov, who had earlier resigned after being accused of corruption. Soon afterward, Valkov was arrested on charges of taking $2 million in bribes from a contractor working on public infrastructure in the city of Slatina, where Valkov was mayor at the time. The former finance minister is among Romania's highest-ranking public figures who have been snared in corruption investigations. Others accused of corruption include a former presidential candidate and former Prime Minister Adrian Năstase, mentor to the current Prime Minister Victor Ponta. Romania has long been viewed as one of the most corrupt countries in Europe. Recent actions taken by prosecutors to win convictions have won praise from the European Union. In the past year alone, 1,200 people have been convicted of corruption, including 24 mayors.
So, welcome back. You can hear the rest of that audio, as well as the other audio that we played on tonight's show, a little bit later on in the evening. We will upload it to our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/houston.indymedia. And I just want to remind everyone that we are all volunteers here. Most of us at the station are volunteers, and we have another great opportunity for you to get involved. There is a raffle that is ending soon on the 14th of this month. It is for a weekend getaway in New Orleans. You get a pair of weekend passes to the New Orleans Jazz Festival on the weekend of May 1st through the 3rd and a two-night stay at the Blue Green Club condominium. So the tickets are $5 for one and $20 for five, and you can call in to 713-526-4000 if you want to reserve some tickets, or you can just come into the station at 419 Lovett in the Montrose and pick up some tickets. And also, we have another announcement. On Monday, April 13th, there will be a emergency press conference for Mumia Abu-Jamal at the Mickey Leland Federal Building. The address for that is 1919 Smith. That'll be, again, April 13th. It is from 4:30 to 6 p.m. The Texas Death Penalty Abolition Movement invites all progressive organizations and individuals to endorse this action for Mumia. So please send your endorsement now. And then join us on Monday to add your voices to those from around the world demanding immediate health care for our brother. There will be an open mic speak out for Mumia, so please bring signs, bring banners, be prepared to make some noise, bring drums. Again, this is a emergency press conference and demonstration for Mumia Abu-Jamal, Monday, April 13th, 4:30 to 6 p.m. The address is 1919 Smith.
And just real quick, want to remind everyone to check our Facebook page for upcoming events, especially Gulf South Rising Week of Action, commemorating the fifth anniversary of the VP spill. And we'll have more on that next week.
Enter KPFT's Jazz Festival Weekend Getaway Raffle, where the prize is a pair of weekend passes to the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival and a three-day condo stay on the weekend of May 1st to the 3rd. Proceeds of this raffle benefits KPFT. At the festival, you'll be able to see Lenny Kravitz, Elton John, Aaron Neville, and a host of other musical acts. Tickets are $5 for one and $20 for five. Get your tickets at KPFT, 419 Lovett Boulevard, from 10 to 6 p.m. every weekday, or call 713-526-4000 and ask for Tony. The drawing will be on April.